Hello and welcome to Central Asian Podcast Majlis. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Over the last several days, an increasingly concerning developments are taking place in northern Afghanistan involving Central Asia or Central Asians. As we speak, Afghan capital Kabul is out of electricity for over 2 weeks after the Taliban attacked on electricity supply from Uzbekistan. Also, provincial capital of Faryab province is out of electricity for the last several days after Taliban cut off supply line from Turkmenistan to the province. Now, even more alarming news is coming out from Tajik-Afghan border, where local Afghan officials say Central Asian militants are supervising the Taliban's activities and they have created a cross-border corridor escaping to Tajikistan when pressured by the Afghan side. At the same time, Russia has just announced to decrease the number of its troops in the bordering areas of Tajikistan-Afghanistan. In this episode of Majlis, we will revisit what we have been discussing in a number of occasions in the past, the security developments in northern Afghanistan and Central Asia border, changes that occurred over the past few months, and what does it mean to the region. To discuss the subject, I have from Montreal, Canada, Helena Thibault, professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at University of Montreal and author of a number of papers on Tajikistan. Obeid Ali, a researcher at the Kabul-based Afghan Analysis Network who specializes in northern Afghanistan. Obeid was in Kunduz for a rare field trip recently. From Prague, here in the studio, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is joining me. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To kick off the debate, let's do some reality check on the ground. I want to play a short audio segment from Mayor of Imam Sahib, which is, in fact, the region stands at the center of our discussion today. The mayor talks about increasing activity of militants, including Tajikistani fighters, in his district.
The ones who prepare explosives and carry out suicide bombings are organized by the Tajikistani and Uzbekistani militants. According to reports we have received from the intelligence, their numbers are around 200 in Imam Sahib and Dashti Archi districts.
This was Amanuddin Qureshi, mayor of Imam Sahib district in Kunduz. Obeid, news about the spectacular fall of Kunduz several months ago to the Taliban is still topic of discussion, which taken back since then, by the way. We also know that rural areas of several districts of Kunduz are either controlled by the militants or remains under their influence. The Kunduz province is separated from Tajikistan with a river, only a river. Tell us, please, how is the situation today in the bordering areas of this volatile Kunduz province, Obeid? What was your impression while you were on the ground, on the field, researching about your paper?
Thank you very much. The situation in Kunduz, unfortunately, has not improved even after the clearance operation that Afghan security forces conducted after the collapse of Kunduz city itself. So the presence of Taliban, even very close to Kunduz city, is still visible. They are still posing threats to government officials and also to security forces. Going further down towards the border with the Tajikistan, I just conducted a research on Archi district. I've noticed many insurgent groups are very much active there and they are gaining advantage. They have already expanded their influence around the district and also in most of the villages. There they have their training bases, their, where they train Afghans, Taliban, and also other Central Asian fighters who came to Afghanistan. But one thing I want to emphasize, which is the number. I would like to mention this very clearly, that the number of Central Asian fighters or foreign fighters supporting the Taliban in Kunduz province is not clear. I dig the issue very much. I found only a limited number of Central Asian fighters in Dasht-e-Archi and also in Imam Saeed. I myself heard from district governor, he mentioned like around 200 fighters.
Right.
But I suspect this number, I have no clue about the exact number of Central Asian fighters. But they have their presence there, they are active, they support local Taliban.
You said they are active, what they do?
They mainly take part in training of the Afghan Taliban. It's mainly military training. And also because they are somehow expert in new technology, they also help them out to use like technologies and in fighting against the Afghan security force. The tactic they use, it's quite new for local Taliban.
Mm. I'm sorry, asking too many questions. How one would differentiate those people, the ones you call and the mayor called Central Asia, from local Taliban militants? Because there are Turkmens and Tajiks on both sides of the border, right? How one would...
That's true. That's true. It's actually very difficult to distinguish these people from Afghan Taliban. Like, as you say, they speak in a same language. But because they are not very much familiar with the area, plus with the culture, with a very local culture in these areas, so local can easily recognize them. And secondly, because they are a bit tough and kind of they have kind of radical ideology, so this helped the local to recognize these groups very easily. But still, it's like as you said, it's very difficult to say whether they are from Uzbekistan, from Kazakhstan, from China, or from wherever. This is very difficult. But still, people can recognize as they are foreigners. But it's difficult to see the number, like how many Tajiks, how many Uzbeks, and how many Turkmens.
The fact that authorities in Obeid, you are also mentioning presence of Tajikistani militants in that part of the country. Helena, you have written about Tajik militants and evolving society at large. What is your take about the fact that Tajikistani militants are found in Afghan side of the border and actively taking part in the fight or in a training cases? Are they a few angry men, or there is an ideological pattern behind their presence in northern Afghanistan?
Actually, I think the important thing to stress here is that the Tajik society and the Afghan society are very differentiated. Even though the border is extremely long and extremely porous, the connections between the two peoples are actually quite limited, I would say. Even trade is limited, perhaps maybe not the drug trade, and that's another issue that we should also talk about more in deeper, talk about more later. But so I think in general, within the population, there isn't much support for Taliban, and even not so much interest in Afghanistan. I think the Soviets did a pretty good job at separating these two peoples. So even at the border, I was there, I remember, and people were saying that they were more connected to Russia than they were to Afghanistan, even if it's the neighbor nearby. So that is an important thing. Level of support in Tajikistan for militancy, for instance, is extremely low. Of course, there is discontent. There is political repression in Tajikistan. But that doesn't mean that people will be drawn by militancy in northern Afghanistan, and this is a topic. Maybe I'm moving away a bit from the topic, but there are, for instance, Tajik militants in other terrorist groups. We've been talking mostly about the Islamic State, but this is a separate issue that most Tajik militants from Tajikistan in the fighting for the Islamic State are mostly recruited in Russia, for instance. So the political game here is very different. So in terms of people in Tajikistan being drawn to the Afghan side, I think it's extremely limited, I would say.
Hmm. limited, or as Obid said, we are not sure about their numbers, but the fact that you know their name pops up again and again in among those militants in northern Afghanistan, the fact that there are some Tajiks regardless of their number. Bruce, what brings them to northern Afghanistan?
There's a lot of Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, for instance, and we know that there's Turkmen and Uzbeks who have crossed the border and come into northern Afghanistan. The governments are fairly repressive, and so they've closed down any alternative forms of expression, meaning secular political parties, for instance. And now they're actually going after what they perceive to be some kind of religious dissidents, too. So the vehicles for venting your frustration, dissatisfaction, whatever, with the government are being closed off. And they're kind of forcing these people into, the closed corner. They don't have very many options for how they want to deal with something to try to change their future for the better. Now, Tajikistan has headed down this same road before, and I agree with what Elaine said 100%, but I would also point out that during the Tajik Civil War days, when there was also civil war in Afghanistan, there was not a lot, but significant cross-border exchanges. Refugees, Tajik refugees went into northern Afghanistan at the start of the Civil War, trickled their way back. Afghan refugees came, certainly when the Taliban started to make their advance on the north in 1996, 97, 98. We did have some Afghan refugees, although the Tajik government worked fast to close off the border to the Afghan refugees, at the same time accepting Tajik refugees back. So we know that it wasn't the border wasn't totally closed. You know, again, we also mentioned the fact that they're trying to encourage, for years, the U.S., all kinds of other people, interested parties in Afghanistan who have been working in Afghanistan for all these years, have been trying to encourage trade between Central Asia and Afghanistan. Now, you know, the kind of people, the numbers of people that we're talking about that are militants in northern Afghanistan are dozens, hundreds, probably. That's fine. But that also suggests that they crossed the border from Central Asia in very small numbers and possibly as individuals. And so at the same time that the governments are told to watch out for militants and extremists, they're also encouraged to allow cross-border trade. Trying to identify the militant from a legitimate merchant, it can be very tricky sometimes. So it's not impossible to believe that over the course of time, we have now got to the point where there are dozens, and I would suggest probably even several hundred at least, militants who have come from Central Asia for reasons of persecution, repression, maybe the lure of something else, maybe they're part of the drug smuggling route, and they're now mixed in with the militants and have formed alliances with Taliban or groups in northern Afghanistan.
Now, Bruce, you touched a very interesting point here, crossing the border from Central Asia to Afghanistan. In fact, I have another segment here to play. That is the mayor of Imam Sahib confirms what you are saying about the cross-border activity of militants. So let's play another segment where then we will continue the discussion in that direction.
فاصله که در دشمن با مرز تاجیکستان داره فقط دریای آمو هست حتی یک تعدادی از اینا از دریا او طرف هم برای خود لانه ساختگی است
There is only a river between the enemy and the Tajik border. Some of them have even created a base in the Kalamkuzar area in Tajikistan on the other side of the river. When militants get under pressure in the Afghan side, they escape to their base in Tajikistan. You have witnessed last year When they were pushed, they disappeared in jungles. There is no distance between the land they occupy in Afghanistan and the territory of Tajikistan. When they cross the river, they are in Tajikistan.
از دریا که عبور میکنند در خاک تاجیکستان داخل میشن و با سرحدی از وا روبروی میشن.
This was Mayor of Imam Sahib Amanuddin Qureshi again. Obid, what do you make of this development? How serious is that? I'm talking about the cross-border activities of militants in that part of the Afghan and Tajikistan border.
Yeah, what I noticed in particularly in Kunduz province, the places or the area that the militant are more interested in to establish their bases, actually it's very close to Afghan-Tajikistan borders. So this creates, of course, concern. It means this make it very easy for those who want to cross the border and get to these shelters very quickly and get help with those who are already there. But one thing should be very clear, like many, like as my colleague said, many of Central Asian fighters, they are more interested in joining the IS instead of Taliban. It is because of the IMU clash or conflict with the Taliban and the killing of the Osman Ghazi. So
the leader of IMU, yeah.
Kunduz, yeah, so I when I was in Kunduz, I've noticed this, that many of those supporters of the IMU that somehow now they are split from the IMU, but still they are more flexible towards IS instead of local Taliban. They do publish regular video clips, and they do translate Baghdadi's statement into local languages. So I don't think that there will be like a big place for those who want to join the IS, come to Afghanistan, and then from here they can find their ways to get to IS rank. And the IS president of Taliban in Kunduz province also somehow prevented or blocked this route for the Central Asian extremist individuals or group to join the militant group in Afghanistan, or also cross Afghanistan, get to Pakistan or Waziristan.
Sorry for interrupting you. You said that Central Asian fighters are interested in joining IS rather than the Taliban. So whom are they joining when they cross the border?
It's very difficult and it's very limited for them to cross the border and immediately join the IS, because we do not have any a strong front of the IS in northern Afghanistan yet. So this made it very difficult for these people. Of course, when they come somehow, they join those their Taliban or some other groups that they feel more confidence to work with them. But still, they are entirely under the control of the Taliban. The large presence of Taliban in northern Afghanistan, particularly in Kunduz province, so somehow blocked the IS movement or somehow block those who are interested in ICE to actively or to visibly conduct their operations or their activities in Kunduz and in northern Afghanistan.
Thank you, Amit. Helen, it looks like either those guys in the Afghan side of the border are Taliban or IS. Regardless of their numbers, the fact that we are talking about this issue again and again, these increasing security developments, Afghan officials are repeatedly talking about that subject, but it looks like Tajik officials just ignore these developments. Have you seen anything in terms of policy decision by the Tajik officials to respond to whatever is happening right on their border?
I think for the moment, the Tajik authorities are more concerned, as you mentioned, with internal politics than they are about external politics, especially the Afghan conflict. Well, as we have seen in the last few months, there is a tightening of authoritarianism in Tajikistan, the banning of the main political party, and this is an issue perhaps connected to Afghanistan because it's an Islamic party, the only one that existed in the region. So you have a tightening authoritarianism, and you have also had a roundtable about this increasing nepotism in Central Asia. There is really this concern about internal politics. But internal politics is also connected to external politics, obviously, especially in the case of Badakhshan, which is the bordering region with Afghanistan. There were some armed clashes within Tajikistan in 2012 and 2014 that were quite dramatic.
Let me add, Helen, here. Several Tajik border guards were kidnapped by the Taliban in the past months, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. But this is a strange thing that happened because they were told to go by their superior to go to the Afghan side to get some wood. That's the story. And they were kidnapped. So there was actually a mistake from the Tajik side. In sense of preparedness, I mean, just to finish on Badakhshan, this is an issue that the Tajik authorities are concerned, the control over this region, that is an autonomous region in Tajikistan, where the drug trade is flowing. So there are many issues here, political issues, the drug trade issues, internal politics in Tajikistan. And then, of course, there's the influence of Russia, because I think the Tajiks are concerned by what is going on in northern Tajikistan. And they have, in January 2015, I think, secured or just sort of opened a new military base near Kulyab as well. There are 16 1,000 border guards in Tajikistan guarding not only the Afghan border, but others. But they're ill-equipped, I think. And corruption is a big problem, especially in connection to the drug trade. So border guards can actually be corrupt. Here comes Russia, that has an important military presence in southern Tajikistan, close to the border. There were maybe we will talk about this a bit later as well, but there were some developments in this regard. Yeah. The number of troops might be reduced in the future, despite Russia having expressed its full support for Tajikistan. And I also have to mention that Tajikistan can also count not only on Russian presence, but also on the CSTO, the Collective Security Organization. They conducted some military drills last year in 2015 in May that were quite important and were connected to the drill was related to prevention of an international conflict. So there is some preparation, and there's obviously great concern in the region for that.
Right, right. I also wanted to give microphone here to Bruce Panier about the fact that Tajik authorities are very much vocal to talk about their citizens joining IS in Syria than what's happening in there across the border. Just if you want, Bruce, just briefly, if you want to add anything into that. Otherwise, we will take a break to start our second half of the discussion.
Yeah, no problem. 2 points I want to make on that real quick. One, of course, and this is no secret, that the Central Asian governments, not only the Tajik government, have been using this threat of extremists as a pretext for jailing or neutralizing any number of opponents, many of whom have no connection to Islamic extremist groups whatsoever. But they keep throwing that out there all the time and saying we have to watch out for these people. Now, in the case of the Islamic State, this is easier to say Tajik citizens are going off to join the Islamic State because they're further away from Tajikistan. Once the Tajik government starts talking about Tajik militants just on the other side of the border of Afghanistan, it's practically an advertisement to cross the border. And cause perhaps one day return to Tajikistan, which is then just a walking distance, and cause trouble at home.
Right, right. So let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will discuss what are the recent developments in the rest of the Central Asian border with Afghanistan and what Central Asian governments are doing to deal with the situation. Welcome back to the Central Asian Podcast Majlis. Today we are discussing security situation in Afghan Central Asia border in the light of several recent security developments. To discuss the subject, from Montreal, Canada, Helen Thibault, professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Montreal and author of a number of papers on Tajikistan, is joining us. Also, Obaid Ali, a researcher at the Kabul-based Afghan Analysis Network, who specializes in northern Afghanistan, is with us today by phone from Kabul. From Prague, here in the studio, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is joining me in the studio. I'm Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Majlis. Obaid, as we speak, I don't know what source of electricity are you using to put on your light or computer, but it has been over 2 weeks since Kabul is not provided with regular electricity. Why is that?
Actually, we use a generator to get some light. It's almost 2 weeks, like as you mentioned in the beginning, that the electricity cut down in Dandighuri and Dandishorabdin area and Puluhumri district of Baghlan province. There are some contradicted statements around. Government official claimed that electricity cut by Taliban, and also Taliban had their own statement rejecting the claim of the government, and instead they blaming the government for shooting artillery and cutting the electricity. But it has left a major impact on social lives of the country, particularly in Kabul. So it's 2 weeks, there's no electricity. Most of the factories who I talked with, they are complaining about the problems, and also many other people, local residents and also businessmen.
I understand the part of the bulk of the electricity to Kabul was provided, I believe, through Baghlan, right? And there was also interruption by the Taliban militants or the IS militants in that regard in Baghlan province, and that is not, I'm told, is restored yet. One of the most volatile province in northern Afghanistan with border to Turkmenistan is faced with similar situation. Today I'm talking about provincial capital of Faryab province that is called Memena. It is also in darkness from last several days after militants cut off the electricity supply which would come from Turkmenistan to the province, and it's not the first time. What's the reason behind assertiveness of the militants, especially attacking against those kind of social infrastructure, Bruce, in northern Afghanistan? Whether it is strategy change or something?
I'm not sure that it entirely is, or I think that you can't say that across the board that's what happened. And it seems from the reports I've read about Baghlan that was probably an accident, at least the first pylon that got blown up during the fighting. It was no one's intention that should be downed. That said, during the 1980s, the Mujahideen were famous for blowing up these kind of power lines and things like that would cut off electricity to cities because they wanted to show that the Red Army was not in control of the country and neither were the government forces. And I've seen the Taliban denial. I've seen that they said that they wouldn't do that. It's not part of their plan. Nothing that would hurt the people in such a way. The interesting thing I think about the Baghlan thing is that the Afghan officials have said that they, one, the weather, and two, the fighting has prevented them from repairing the lines. But in trying to downplay the significance of the Taliban gains in Baghlan, one official at least said that the Taliban were cutting down more power poles and that they had brought in special electric saws to cut down the power lines. And this was from an Afghan government official, and that suggests to me that not only are the Taliban holding the ground where the pylons are, or these power poles, but that they have a logistics network that's able to bring in heavy equipment so that they can cause further acts of sabotage. It was a very strange admission where he said, we can throw them out, but we can't, until the weather gets better. And in the meantime, they seem to be connected well enough that they can bring in more equipment and damage more power lines. So, in Faryab, it does seem to be part of the practice where I think that they are just trying to leave areas in darkness out there. Because this is, let's face it, what happened in Faryab just a few days ago happened last year, too, where they blew on us. This is the second time they put out the electricity.
Yeah. We are just running out of the time we devoted for the discussion. I need to wrap up the discussion quickly. But just one last question. Over the past few months, we have seen some increased activity by the Afghan authorities, especially under the command of General Dostum in the northern Afghanistan. There were some temporary achievements to drive out the militants from certain villages and districts. We have also heard him saying that he will be chasing the militants everywhere in the north. I did not see anything like that happening later. In fact, areas from the Taliban went back to Taliban militants since then. What's happening in northern Afghanistan? Can the authorities deal with this increasing security developments in northern Afghanistan? Let's, Obid, again, I'm coming back to you briefly, please.
This season is the exactly the right season for the Afghan government if they really want to gain ground and clear the Taliban from most of the areas of the north. But so far, I haven't seen any major impact even after the clearance operation of the Afghan security forces. So the Taliban still have their bases close to Kunduz city itself and also around the district centers, which are the key districts and strategic districts in Kunduz city. So I haven't seen any major impact of the clearance operation, and I want to repeat that this is the time the government need to gain the ground. If they lose it this time, so it means during spring and summer, the Taliban will obviously start their so-called spring offensive. So that will be very difficult for the government to fight against the Taliban in several fronts across the country.
Right, right. Unfortunately, I have to wrap up discussion here. Thank you very much, Ubid Ali, for your insightful comments on this subject. Also from Montreal, Canada, Helena Thibault, professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Montreal and author of a number of papers on Tajikistan. Thank you very much for
you
joining us today. Also from Prague, here in the studio, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bruce, thank you very much for being with us today. And this is it from me, Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.